Welcome to the Stadium Pulse by Tegan Randolph, brought to you by Kretschmann Media. Tegan will be bringing you a wealth of knowledge about all things college football on Stadium Pulse. And here's your host, Tegan Randolph.
Stadium Pulse, everybody. This is a college football show where we only talk about college football around here. Episode 2, a new look. I know we tested a little bit of a background, but we're switching it up here and giving you the full picture, no pun intended, just giving you the reality here. But I hope everyone is watching this, whether it's live or watching it back, is doing well. That we are going to talk some college football. We're about 20 days from the college football season, and there's a lot to talk about. As we get closer to week zero, once that moment hits, and we're going to talk about Kansas State going against Iowa State in a clash in Dublin, Ireland today. We're going to preview the SEC, as you see in the thumbnail and the title. It's going to be a big discussion about the SEC. I'm going to talk about the contenders. I'm going to talk about some of the sleepers, who is going to be the best player in that conference. And the last thing we're going to be talking about is which coaches are under the most pressure for the upcoming season. So no better way to not make you wait, to not make you sit here throughout an entire 30-minute show than to dive in to the SEC to the fullest extent as possible. With the SEC, in my opinion, this is the best conference in all of college football for a very simple reason. When we're talking about the SEC compared to like the Big Ten, to my only opinion, that it is the only competitor in terms of the best college football conferences. The SEC has a tier two. In the most simple way possible, the SEC has a long list of teams that if you were to tell me that Missouri knocked off one of the contenders, Texas A&M, Oklahoma, Florida, teams that I would classify as that tier two, I would not be shocked. But if you were to go to the Big Ten and tell me that, I don't know, some of the, like a Nebraska knocked off Ohio State, Nebraska knocked off Penn State, USC knocked off one of those top teams, I would feel shocked because that tier two is just not as strong or definitive in the Big Ten. It's the only thing that I think is holding itself back, unless they just keep winning national titles, from definitively being the best conference in all of college football. But we're not talking just about the Big Ten versus the SEC. We're talking about the 2025 season and what to expect. Let's talk about some of the contenders here. In my eyes, it's about four teams that I can definitively say I think are going to win the SEC this year. Alabama, in my opinion, is not going to be ranked number one, and they are just one of the contenders. Alabama, in my eyes, is a definitive SEC title contender. And it wouldn't shock me if they are the number one team in this conference for a multitude of reasons. Kalen DeBoer just wins football games. That's just something that I can stamp. The same way that we go with Indiana, Google me, I just win football games. Yeah, you could do the exact same thing for Kalen DeBoer at a very, very high level. They have arguably the best offensive line in the entire country who could improve and get better. We have Ty Simpson at quarterback, which I understand a lot of people are not going to be as excited about a Ty Simpson as the electric Jalen Milroe, who had his ups and downs. And that's what I think held them back in this offense extensively last year. There's no way around it. Ty Simpson, with a great system around him, a great offensive mind, a guy who is going to just have to put the ball in playmakers' hands. And when we talk about these playmakers, there's Ryan Williams, there's Prentice. There's so many pieces on this offense I could continue and keep going that it almost seems like a no-brainer. The same way that I can get excited about like an Arch Manning who has not played a lot of football, the same way I can get excited for Ty Simpson, because I know the situation and the play calling around him is going to put him in the best position to succeed. Mind you, both of them are five stars. Now, one has been in the college game a lot longer than the other, but neither have played a lot of football. And both of them are five stars. Just one of them has the Manning name and a lot of expectations behind him. And you're kind of playing with house money with a guy like Ty Simpson. But speaking of Texas, Arch is extremely interesting. And Texas in general is a SEC title contender once again, to no surprise. One of the best programs in terms of talent acquisition, one of the best programs in just setting themselves up to succeed year in and year out. Sarkisian is a head coach that is going to perennially keep his team in the space of a national title until he wins one at Texas. But is it going to happen in 2025? I think that's the question you have to ask, because they are once again refreshing a lot. Now, Texas fans will instantly tell you that they are very much in the space of, we had these guys already. We're not bringing in an entire transfer portal class to fix all of our problems. That's just not what Texas is doing. But it's a lot of unproven talent. It's a lot of names that, unless you're within the space or the state of Texas, you may not know these names yet. There's concerns about the offensive line because of that. You don't know their 1 through 5 off the top of your head. Like, you knew a Kelvin Banks, like you knew some of the guys that went to the NFL, guys like Jake Majors, all these guys that you definitively knew last year to help support a guy like Quinn Ewers. You don't know them as they're going to support Arch Manning. You know Arch because he's the topic of the town. The defense is going to be great. If there is one concern I had with the defense, it's going to be refreshing that interior defensive line for back-to-back seasons. But like I said, Texas, they continue to refresh. They haven't earned that just blind faith that we had with like the Clemson and the Alabamas of the world in the 2010s, but they are going to be just fine. I think you could say Georgia. Georgia's just going to be in that space and definitively contending because it's Kirby Smart. If you were to tell me Kirby Smart and his team in 2024 were in the hundreds of running the damn ball, I would have called you crazy. But I like Georgia. It's just, you're going to have the talent acquisition. You're going to have a head coach that knows their weaknesses and their strengths. And they won the SEC championship last year in what felt like a down year. Now they're not quarterback centric like they were with Carson Beck. Now they have pass catchers that should be able to catch the damn football. Sure, they're replacing a lot on the defense, but I love some of the pieces they have. There are some guys, there's a transfer from, I believe, Army that is going to be a household name. I would stamp it. I would book it. Do whatever you need to do. But I would guarantee you that he ends up being a household name. I would also say LSU. Now, LSU is the one that you're going to have the most pushback for. LSU's in my SEC title game. I think LSU is very much set up for success this upcoming year because they have to. There's another gear with college coaches when they know they're under pressure, when they know that they're under the line of fire. And Brian Kelly is that. LSU is a pressure cooker. If you are not winning national titles at LSU and you're going 9-3, 8-5, that's not good enough. That's never going to be good enough for LSU. And Brian Kelly, you could put up all these great stats with guys like Jaden Daniels. You could put up these great offenses. You can have these moments where you go to an SEC championship game in your first year, but it's not enough because you're not contending for national titles. So they made a pivot. And the definitive moment was when they lost Bryce Underwood. They were struggling in the NIL space. People will tell you time and time again, LSU was not at the front runner position of a great NIL program. And when they lost to Michigan on what was basically a buyout, Michigan forced LSU to get it all together in the lightest way I can put it. And they ended up pulling an incredible transfer portal class. Garrett Nussmeier comes back. Caden Durham, and the commitment to running the football is the huge key for them. Because if they are able to run the football, and if this defense takes the step that I think it should, people forget that they were DBU pretty definitively, at least in my eyes. And they have completely fallen off a cliff. I mean, one of the worst secondaries in the SEC for the past couple of years. That should take a step forward based on the talent that I have evaluated and have looked at for this LSU program. They should get better. And we'll find out week one against Clemson in what they call Death Valley. My opinion is LSU is Death Valley, but to each their own. That goes to my next point. When we talk about the kings of the SEC, the top contenders, you got to have the best player in that space. I would be shocked if, you know, someone that wasn't a contender in the SEC didn't also have one of the best players. You know, we could talk about DJ Lagway. We could talk about Lenore Sellers, Marcel Reed, all these different players that could be the best player on their team and potentially the best player in their conference. But to me, it's going to be Garrett Nussmeier. When evaluating Nuss in 2024, it was an up and down roller coaster. Everyone will tell you he was throwing picks. He was forcing the ball into harm's way. We're talking about a quarterback that is a true gunslinger, a dying breed in the world of quarterbacks. But there's those moments that I have to hold on to. He is a coach's son. His coach goes and currently works for the New Orleans Saints. He is a guy that has to play boring football, and it will completely change his game. And when I say boring football, what do I mean? A guy that's going to check down the ball, a guy that's going to play it safe sometimes, not put it in harm's way. And I think if Caden Durham takes a step forward and the rushing attack gets better, if he's able to check the ball down and not try to throw it over the middle every chance he has an opportunity to, two manageable fixes in an offseason, mind you. These are not leaps and bound jumps that he has to make. I don't think his accuracy is a problem. I don't think his arm strength is a problem. I don't think his processing is a problem. These are small tweaks that can be done in an offseason. And he's going to be in the spotlight time and time again at LSU. I think he is going to step up to the plate and be the best player in the SEC. But we have talked a lot about the contenders and some of the best players in this space. And understandably so, that's why people are very interested in what the SEC comes to provide. But who are the sleepers? Who are the dark horses in the quickest way possible? Because we have way too many teams to talk about. Texas A&M is an easy dark horse. You see the pennant behind me. I'm not going to harp on it too long because I could sit here for 20, 30 minutes on just this team. Texas A&M has the talent, and they're going to have a very high floor because they're bringing back two very dynamic running backs, probably one of the best running back rooms in the entire country. I would argue a top five offensive line, a returning quarterback. And the only question I have is this team's defensive line, Mike Elko's specialty. I feel good about that team. Florida is in desperation mode. Florida is a make or break program right now. After what Dan Mullen did to this program, you had Billy Napier fight and continue to trust his process. With a guy like DJ Lagway, it could all change this year, regardless of the schedule. And that is a big thing to say regardless to, because it is the most difficult schedule in the country. If it clicks, that schedule becomes way less difficult, because instead of Florida being concerned of who they have to play, teams have to get worried about Florida being the team they have to play. And it completely changes the perspective of this team. They have the ceiling of winning the SEC. People are scared to say that. People don't want to say that. That's their ceiling, but their floor is also a 5-7 year. There's a lot of volatility that could happen with this program. But if we were to take away the history over the past couple of years and took away the schedule and you just looked at the roster themselves, Lagway, check. You know that's your superstar quarterback. Running back room, you feel real good about that. Wide receiver room, you feel good. Offensive line, veteran talent. And if you look at the seniority around this defense, the defense should be incredibly strong. I don't see a lot of gaps outside of my questions about the coaching. What's going to happen on Saturdays? What is going to potentially hold them back? And I look at it and I think it's the coaching. South Carolina is a team that has gotten a lot of hype this year. Let's pump the brakes on South Carolina. I understand. You go watch the very first snap of football against Clemson, and you're going to be hooked on Sellers. Rightfully so. You're going to watch the Netflix documentary, and you're going to completely believe that Lenore Sellers is the second coming of Cam Newton. And guess what? I'm not going to disagree with you. I think Lenore Sellers is incredibly talented, incredibly impactful with what he's able to create when nothing is there. My concern about South Carolina, the program, South Carolina, the team, is they lost a lot. And the play style that they're wanting Sellers for them to win football games could be very reliant on some magic. And in a conference like the SEC, in a schedule that brings, you're going to have some volatility. What happens when that magic doesn't come through? You're basically asking him to be Superman, something that we have not seen funny enough, since 2011 against Cam Newton. You're going to run into some problems if that is what you're relying on. Because at the end of the day, you're going to have a pick there. You're going to have a fumble there. He can't just make magic out of nothing. Like, he is not the most polished passer. Point blank, period. End of statement. He can get better. He could process the field better. But that's not going to be a guarantee that he takes this Joe Burrow type of leap, which you can't rely on. You're relying on anomalies for this season to be a full-blown success, which I think they want a college football playoff spot. I just don't know if it's going to happen. The last team I want to talk about in terms of the SEC, before we move on, because we may have to make this into two parts just because the conference is so stacked at the end of the day, and we have the time to do so. So tune in on Sunday to see the rest of the SEC, because I have plenty of thoughts, and then maybe next week we'll talk about the Big Ten. The last team I want to talk about is Joey Aguilar and the Tennessee Volunteers. Tennessee is in a very peculiar position this year. They lost Nico Iamalava. I'm proud I got that name correct consistently. In the middle of their offseason. Year two quarterback in that specific system. You were really hoping that he could mitigate some of the problems that were there, losing Dylan Sampson, losing a lot of good pieces on that defense, Jermod McCoy being their corner coming off of a torn ACL. There was a lot that you were hoping a year two quarterback could kind of play that Superman role. He's gone late into the offseason. And now you're bringing in Joey Aguilar, who has some really good moments. He is a true gunslinger. He's going to throw the football. But I don't know if he's the type of talent that can cover up those problems, man. If there's a team that I'm really low on this upcoming year, I know a lot of people are. I like their defense. I think they're going to be a team that you do not want to face, especially in Knoxville. You don't want to go to that stadium. Weird things happen in that stadium. But are they a team that originally went to a college football playoff and are hoping to potentially get back? I would be shocked if the Tennessee Volunteers made it to the college football playoff. We got to talk about week zero. As much as I want to talk about the SEC the whole time, week zero is getting closer than you may realize. About 2 weeks, that special Saturday is going to be back. Last year, we had Georgia Tech face against Florida State, and which is a very interesting matchup to look back on, knowing that Florida State would lose one of 10 losses starting in Dublin, Ireland, and Georgia Tech would be a team that pushes Georgia, the SEC champion, to the brink. I mean, what was it? 7, 8, 9, 10 overtimes. And now we come back to Dublin 365 days later, Kansas State versus Iowa State. This is probably the best Dublin, Ireland matchup that we've had up to this point, just in terms of quality of teams. And when evaluating early season matchups, a simple way of looking at it is, who do I have at the coach and who do I have at the quarterback? And then the conversation really starts, because you can start diving into the niche offensive line dynamics, the defensive line. I need to know who is leading the team and how much continuity do I have? Well, unlucky for me, this matchup has continuity on both sides, Chris Kleiman and Avery Johnson. And then you have Rocco Beck. I'm blanking on Iowa State's head coach right now because he's one of my favorites, so I apologize. But you have continuity on both of these teams. But where you don't have continuity, and I think is a huge concern for me, is Iowa State's receiver room, losing two NFL wide receivers who were incredibly effective with their senior quarterback in Rocco Beck. And I loved Iowa State last year because they had so much coming back for another round of Iowa State football. You had so much to definitively know your identity going into the next season. Iowa State is not a program, and like most Big 12 programs, they are not set up to be a team that is just continuously making Big 12 title games. They're not pulling in the roster like that. It's never going to be like that for Iowa State. It's going to be about taking in guys and developing them and building up to these years. And last year, I cashed in all my chips. I had Iowa State going to the Big 12 title game. I had Iowa State being one of the best teams in that conference because of those reasons, because they had really talented players who had been with that program for extended amounts of time and had developed for this opportunity, and they had an incredible year. I don't have that right now with them. They are churning out a lot and having to put in a lot of fresh faces, a lot of transfers. You have the quarterback, you have a good head coach, but you're now facing a version of you in the Kansas State Wildcats. Avery Johnson in year two, Chris Klieman, a very good head coach, Dylan Edwards, a dynamic running back. If you remember, if you watched any Colorado football, he was a transfer. He actually transferred last year. He's going to be in year two. That alone and that dynamic is really intriguing, because I always will have faith that Kansas State is going to produce a very dynamic rushing attack, a very effective rushing attack, no matter who the offense coordinator is, because that's just their, that's their brand. You know Kansas State by that factor. Their defense, I think, should take a step forward. They had a problem in the secondary. So if Iowa State clicks with their transfer wide receivers or Rocco Beck, the game is over. But you know what doesn't travel that well in college football? Passing attacks. You know what does travel really well? Rushing attacks. You know who can run the ball better? It's going to be Kansas State. I think Kansas State, this is going to be a low-scoring game. If I were to predict, and I've done a complete breakdown on this matchup, I fully expect that Avery Johnson's play is going to take a step forward to match Rocco Becht. And the play style that he's going to run is going to be a lot more effective early into the season, with a lot more veteran leadership in this defensive room that's wanting to take a step forward, especially in their biggest weakness. They knew going into this season, we have to be better in the secondary. And Rocco Becht in this defense with Iowa State, they also knew they have to be better against the run, because I was there live when Cam Scadabo did what he did against Iowa State in that Big 12 title game. And it, to be fair, you know, Cam Scadabo did that against everybody, but still it was a weakness. So now you're kind of combating, you know, two teams that are wanting to get better in their biggest weakness going against a team that's very strong in that. I have more faith that Kansas State pushes that a little bit more and is more effective against that, because of the roster that they have and the continuity. So with that in mind, I think this is going to be low scoring. This Dublin game is really weird, and it's honestly a really good matchup between two very even teams. I'm surprised that the point spread is above 3. I think this should be around 2, 1.5. I do think Kansas State is correctly favored in this game. I would not be surprised if it becomes something that if Iowa State stalls out the first couple drives, that Kansas State's able to really control the game from the get-go. And they may not blow them out, because I don't think their offense is going to be able to produce that much that quickly. But this could definitely be something where we're leaving halftime and it's 21-10. And it really feels like Kansas State is just kind of controlling the front seven. I like their offensive line. I like some of the pieces that they've added. I'm going to say Kansas State wins this game in Dublin, Ireland to kick off their year. And I still think Iowa State's going to be pretty good for the rest of the season. This does not deter what their season will be defined as. I still think Iowa State's going to be a problem for most Big 12 teams, and same can be said for Kansas State. If the results are inverse, they're going to be fine. It is funny to have a week zero matchup be a conference matchup, but I still think we're definitely going to be looking at these teams in a positive light, unlike we did with Florida State and Georgia Tech. Ooh. Like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, let's talk about some coaches that are under the most pressure in the vacuum of just 2025. Because I could talk about coaches that, like, if they do not play well this year, they're going to be on the hot seat for 2026. I think Brian Kelly is probably in that. although I talked about how Brian Kelly is under a lot of pressure this year, he's going to get most likely one more year. Mike Elko being another one. I think if Matt Rhule disappoints this upcoming year, he may get one more year unless like a guy like Dylan Raiola goes into the transfer portal. I'm talking about like true pressure cooker situations. Billy Napier is the easy one. And he's been in this pressure cooker for about two seasons now. And I understand a lot of people have the faith that it's just going to work out, me included. If it doesn't, though, because as unfortunate as it is with a guy like DJ Lagway, who has dealt with a lot of injuries, it could be a situation where it's just unfortunate that the process just didn't work out in his favor. It's unfortunate that the schedule is as brutal as it is. Maybe DJ Lagway takes a step forward, but it's just not enough because their ceiling goes as high as his ceiling, and his ceiling's unlimited. But if they end up 6-6, like how many times can you keep, you know, spinning the wheel with the talent that's on this roster that should win some games? And you got a taste of it last year. It's not like it didn't happen last year. You know, administration has seen it. Even with some of the difficult games that they did play with a lesser roster, now you have a roster that should be set for it, and you pull off like a 6-6, 5-7, 7-5, which isn't out of the realm of possibility with a roster like this. He is under immense pressure because I don't think he's going to just get another year. James Franklin, he is not someone that is going to be under pressure to be fired. He is in a different type of pressure. He is now, I would probably highlight as the new Ryan Day, in a sense of you have been in this space. You are a shark circling the national title, but you haven't been able to get the job done. The way that we talked about a guy like Ryan Day, who was just continuously having his roster and his program in the vicinity of a national title, James Franklin has now taken that spot in my eyes. A guy that you have to get the job done, and it might have to be this year, because everyone will say, you know, the defense is going to be good. Drew Aller's going to be good. You have two NFL level running backs. Catron Allen more than likely starts at 90% of college football teams. Same could be said for Nicholas Singleton. But then you circle the wide receiver room. You lose a guy like Tyler Warren, probably one of the best college football players I've ever seen. But you invested into it, which was not something they were doing before. They brought in a lot of talent into that wide receiver room. You have continuity with the OC. You have a new DC that just won a national title. At what point is it going to click? Because Penn State, to me, is not a team that is always going to be in the hunt to actually win the national title. They've always been a team that is going to potentially either make it or be very close. Even if they beat Notre Dame last year, they were not going to beat Ohio State. They were not a team that you could feel confident was going to win it. This is different this year. I think they have the ceiling and capability to win a national title. And you know what that brings is pressure. Pressure to a coach who has not been able to get the job done. Because the job for Penn State is to get back to the mountaintop. And he's done everything he can to get this program, and he deserves immense amount of credit that people really do not give him in where Penn State was and what James Franklin was able to do. And so he can have that credit, but he can also have some expectations because that's what this roster is going to provide. And the last coach we'll talk about is Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley has so much pressure on him this year for reasons that aren't directly with the football field. It's the fact that they have a top two class for the upcoming high school rankings. A top two class that USC, who poached the general manager from Notre Dame, has done a fantastic job on the recruiting trail. An immaculate job. It's not just the names and the stars that they were able to bring in. It's the guys that they have been able to bring in. You know, I dive into, you know, high school recruiting extensively to understand, is it really the star value or is it the player? And USC's got some guys coming in if they were to stay. Because I don't think they're staying if it's 6-6, 7-5. I don't think they're staying if they don't see progression in USC getting better. USC I can't remember the statistic off my head, had so many one score losses last year. Something very similar to what we were doing with, you know, Nebraska and Scott Frost. They had all these one score losses and we thought they could bounce back and they never did. We're kind of in the same boat with the USC. They went from the hundreds in defensive metrics 2 years ago. Last year, they were in the 50s. Can you take that step forward? The biggest question right now in my eyes is the quarterback. With a Lincoln Riley-led team, I like Jaden Maiava. I think he's a solid quarterback. But what does he need to be for this team to be a Big Ten championship contender? Because Jacoby Lane and Malachi Lemon are incredibly dynamic. The wide receivers are some of the best. I think even post Jordan Addison, this is the best wide receiver room. I like the running backs. Like, there's things to like. But Lincoln Riley, what is going to be enough to keep that class? Because that class is his golden ticket. That class adds pressure. Because if he loses that, that talent acquisition card that really has not been there consistently with USC really becomes a concern for long-term ramifications of what we look back at as the Lincoln Riley era for USC. But with that in mind, thank you guys so much for watching today's show. This is the Stadium Pulse. This is a college football show. Simply put, we only talk about college football year round. 3 episodes every single week, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday. Tuesday and Thursday is going to be 5:30 to 6 o'clock every single Tuesday and Thursday. And then Sunday, to my understanding, 3:30 to 4 Eastern, if I'm remembering off the top of my head. But with that in mind, thank you guys so much for watching today's stream. I'll see you guys next time.